Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We are coming to you live from the massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Aaron, it is the, it's not the second annual because we're not doing this annually, but it's the second, what's the word for second month of Cloud News of the Month?
Second monthly?
The second monthly. Welcome to the second monthly edition of Cloud News of the Month. We're gonna recap February. How are you, man? How you been?
I'm good. Yeah, I was telling you before we hit record, though, to be honest, though, I'm really, really tired. So a quick personal story. So, my youngest daughter is home from college. She's on spring break this week. And she had some friends come with her, too. They were flying out of the airport here to go home and go on vacations and stuff like that. And they had a really early flight, like a 5 a.m. flight. So they just decided to stay up all night last night. So I did get some sleep, but it was not a lot.
Yeah.
The joys of kids leaving the house and then returning home, and now I have to deal with that.
I think you and I did that maybe the very first reInvent. It was out in Vegas, and we ended up just staying up all night because we had the flight in the morning. So yeah, life comes around. Life comes at you fast, I guess. We are, for folks that don't know, for folks who've been longtime listeners, we always used to do Cloud News of the Week. It was always sort of two or three blurbs between the intro and the main interview. We decided that instead of doing that, we wanted to give the stuff each month its own sort of breathing room, its own oxygen. So we're going to do a Cloud News of the Month. We started doing that this year. If you go back, there is one for January, which probably is in the first episode of February. And then this will be the first episode of March, which will be sort of a look back at February. So we're going to dig into that right after the break. Are you getting pressure from finance to justify or reduce your cloud bill? Cloud Zero is the only cloud cost platform loved by engineers and trusted by finance. Cloud Zero can identify unused, idle, or over-provisioned resources, alert you to spend anomalies, and organize 100% of your spend into a framework that mirrors your business structure, like cost per customer, product feature, or team. It's the most powerful platform ever built to provide accurate, granular visibility into your total cloud spend without the typical pitfalls of legacy cloud cost management tools, like endless tagging or clunky Kubernetes support. Manage cost, optimize development, and maximize profit, all in one platform. Join companies like Rapid7, Drift, and SeatGeek by visiting cloudzero.com/cloudcast to get started. That's cloudzero.com/cloudcast. Visit today to experience immediate and ongoing savings on your cloud bill. And we're back, and man, we have a as the weather has warmed up, the news of tech has warmed up quite a bit. So we have a lot of things in the notes for folks that are taking a look. We will try and get all this in the notes. If for some reason the player that you're using cuts off the notes, we'll also put a link in the show notes for so you can get to all the links. And sometimes there's a character limit and stuff. So if you go in there and you don't see them all, or you don't see some of the things that we talked about, click the bigger link that's in the show notes, and it'll be able to get you to the document. So
yeah, I was wondering how we were going to solve that problem. We didn't talk about that before we hit record, but again, we're kind of evolving this over time, and we have probably, 20 plus stories to talk about, but don't worry, we're not going to go through all of them like that. What we're going to do is we're going to kind of break them into trends that we're seeing. And that way, hopefully, we're providing a little bit of value, a little bit of commentary on all of this and how we're kind of seeing the industry. But also, to your point, our hosting service has a character limit, and we're way beyond the character limit. So yeah, I think what we're going to do is the way we did Cloud News of the Week is, if you've never looked at it, it is at this point a probably 60-page running document of all the links we've ever done for Cloud News of the Week. And what we'll do for this one is we'll have the document. It'll have links to them in there, and we'll link out. So that's our way of getting around our hosting service.
Yep. So before we dive into the sort of trends and so forth, let's talk about the one trend that you and I were talking about before we clicked the play button today. It's a little weird. It feels like all news is AI news these days. It's almost like cloud news has just become, we talked about this, I think, at the end of last year, like cloud in the sense that we think about things, whether it's like infrastructure stuff or security stuff or even developer stuff, is like, it's gone. It's not completely gone, but it's worked its way so far down the priority list for things for people to cover. And even like vendors making announcements AI has sort of become the thing, whether you think of it as like AI washing or it's a real thing or whatever, it has become the thing that's sort of the eye chart that you're like, all right, is that real? Is it not real? So apologies in advance if you're like, I'm tuning in to get the latest on, you know, what's going on in the firewall ACL world or the, you know, cloud pricing for, you know, compute instances. Like, there just aren't a whole lot of those things out there. And it's interesting kind of how quickly it flipped. And it's something that we're going to have to kind of watch throughout this year to figure out if, you know, as we've said a million times, like this AI stuff is real and getting traction, or if this AI stuff is hypey like crypto and Web3 and a few of the, you know, the recent sort of trends that were the all-encompassing buzz.
Yeah, it feels to me like a cross between two past trends, a cross between, you know, the early days of cloud washing, where the technology news really morphed into cloud news.
Yep.
And then it, to your point, the hypey things of like the crypto things, like, is this hypey or is this the next trend and we're just going to wash it? Don't know yet. But definitely like all of the big news outlets, and, you know, I tend to, you know, put a lot of links in the articles, probably way more than we cover on a regular basis, but it's my way of keeping up with the tech sector and emerging tech. And I mean, all of the major news sources, you know, it's not like I'm just getting AI news. I'm getting just emerging tech news and technology news, and it's all turning into AI news. Like, we'll give you the big, for instance, we even did dedicated shows on it about cloud earnings. Earnings really wasn't big news.
No. And I think we've reached the point where we, you know, with at least we always used to cover the big three in terms of cloud earnings. I think, you know, they're still... they still pop up. People still kind of look at them like, okay, did anything weird happen? But we always said at some point, the numbers are going to get so big in terms of the revenue numbers, you know, they're going to get in the XX billions of dollars, that the, you know, the growth numbers are going to look very normalized. They're going to be like, oh, they're 12% or 15% or 20%, as opposed to the 70, 80, 100% that we saw a long time ago. And we all were like, oh my gosh, can this go on forever? And we all knew in the back of our mind, no, this can't go on forever. So yeah, I think they've sort of become normalized. I think the big thing we'll be watching for you know, cloud earnings is really kind of two things. One, you know, do they have any anomalies? Are there anomalies in quarters? And then, you know, we'll go back to start to track some of the stuff that folks like Charles Fitzgerald track, which is like, you know, CapEx spend and how much of, you know, some stuff like how much of that revenue is really revenue versus like some of these AI companies cashing out cloud credits and some of the stuff we've covered on recent shows. So yeah, weird that the earnings weren't a thing, but I don't think they're going to really be a thing much anymore unless they're an anomaly.
Agreed. And I'll cover this too. Like we're kind of calling this the good old fashioned cloud news segment, if you will. And there's a couple trends that, you know, that's certainly one trend that played out. Cloudcast alum Weaveworks, unfortunately, is shutting down.
Yep.
And I think that continues that trend that we're going to see this year of 2024 being sometimes the end of the unicorns. And I know of one or two others that are on the verge. And, you know, I don't think this is the first or the last for this year.
No, I think we're going to see, yeah, a lot of shutting downs and a lot of aqua hire type of merger type of thing. I think what's going to be the most interesting is, you know, what happens with some of these are behind relatively, you know, relatively popular projects. So like, you know, Weaveworks was behind the Flux project, which was kind of a competitor to like Argo in the GitOps space. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens with some of those, you know, do these projects sort of die off? Do they get picked up? That'll be an interesting kind of side trend to watch with this.
Agreed. So we'll move on to the next quick trend. Buoyant changes their distribution and pricing model. Again, you know, this kind of follows the changes we've been talking about of in OSS land.
Yeah. Yeah. And this one's is sort
kinda
of
sort of following the Red Hat model, but
this is not.
Like you can explain it better than I can. So why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, there's just, I mean, I think everything in OSS land, I shouldn't say everything, but like a lot of stuff in OSS land that was a popular project, mostly driven by one company. A company eventually took VC funding, didn't figure out an exit strategy or a, you know, product market fit. You know, they're all seeming to have kind of this last gasp of, okay, well, the best thing to do is sort of, change the model to look more like kind of commercial slash proprietary software. And so in Buoyant's case, they're doing this thing where the open source project is like no longer going to build the software for you. So you sort of have to do that yourself. That's a little bit like kind of what happened with CentOS and CentOS Streams, where it was like the open source still exists, but you're going to have to do the last step. And people are a little bit up in arms about that. Less so with Buoyant because it wasn't nearly as popular as CentOS. But yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of these. I don't know how many more of these we'll cover in terms of like, oh, they changed their OSS model just because, you know, again, they're trying to be profitable or make money to keep the company alive. So, we are seeing a lot of things twisted and the OSS community sort of getting themselves bent out of shape going, I had no idea this was going to happen. How could companies eventually want to make money so that they could stay in business? And, you know, just kind of weird, you know, weird like economics 101 stuff that everybody ignored for 10 years is now kind of coming back to be a reality. So,
Agreed. Why don't we move on? So before we move into our trends, again, we've got larger trends that we're going to talk about. We'll do the AI speed round like we did last month. If it's okay with you, I'll just do the AI speed round.
Yeah, bang them out.
So Stable Diffusion, Stable Diffusion 3 releases. So still, you know, always kind of been considered the top of class image generator. Newest version, still considered top of class image generation. OpenAI released Sora. So video from text, which has been an area that, the results have been janky. But I'd say this is the first really, really good video generator from text.
Yeah, this one looks interesting.
Yeah, it does. I think that's a pretty big leap forward. And then Gemini, Google Gemini, and we're going to Google is a whole topic towards the end here in our trends, but they already released a 1.5, Gemini 1.5 to developers less than a week after releasing Gemini 1.0. So it, you know, really fast release process continues in the AI industry. OpenAI experiments with a memory feature, something that's been requested for a long time now, to not just be able to increase context windows. That's always been one of the big things of how many tokens can you put in, but now also wanting to remember from one to the next as well. And then 11 Labs, who we've talked about on the show before, kind of best in class speech generation. They actually go multilingual.
Yeah. As well. Yeah. Yeah. The other one other little thing about Google and Gemini is if you were watching the news or you saw various things, there was sort of a dust up that happened last weekend or the weekend before. Gemini had some stuff built in where, you know, people started doing a bunch of searches and they were figuring out that like there's some code or there's something in the algorithm that is trying to I don't even know the best way to phrase it. Like they ran into some problems where, you know, in essence it seems like they were like, don't be too, inclusive or uninclusive or whatever. They basically, people ran into things and they were like, hey, show me pictures of, you know, Vikings from the 1400s. And they wouldn't show them in their sort of natural historic thing. They were trying to be like, well, we don't want to have too many white people. Anyways, there's lots of coverage of that. If you go look at like Dithering or Ben Thompson or whatever, there's all sorts of bluster about like, this means that Google has no idea what they're doing with AI and go dig into it if you feel like it. But if you see that, that's probably one scratch tenth of a percent of a percent of a percent of a percent of what you should pay attention to with Gemini 1.5. But yeah, Google's running into a few little issues where like they should be the leader in AI and they make like a little blunder, a little mistake, and people are just destroying them for it. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff I think we're in such early days that are like, they're like the stupid headlines, but you know, sometimes that stuff lingers on longer than it should. So it'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, agreed. So let's move on to our trends.
Yeah.
For trend number one, I find this super interesting because I think this is, you know, the F around and find out stage for OpenAI. If you go back, you know, you remember OpenAI had all the Sam Altman craziness around, November of last year. And it, you know, it impacted Microsoft potentially pretty big. Well, since then, Microsoft has been kind of branching out from OpenAI as a partner. And I think they should, right? They've announced a partnership with Mistral. So Mistral, if you're not familiar with Mistral, a company out of France, really good LLM models that are open source and one of the leading LLM models, open source LLM models at this point in time, as well as releasing some of their own models. So definitely moving away from the OpenAI dependence is what this feels like to me. Now, no one's stated that publicly, but it almost feels like they realized pretty quickly, like Sam Altman and OpenAI, it's almost like that, you know, you get that superstar, you know, techie person that works for you, but their personal life is a complete shit show. Like, and they're just like, wow, this is a risk. Like we got to do something about this.
I was just going to say, it's exactly like that really smart person you have on your team. And they're like, they're great. The stuff they make is great. And then everything about their personality is just annoying as hell. And they make every meeting difficult. And yeah, it's going to be really interesting. There's a lot of interesting aspects to this on the Mistral side. So Mistral is based out of France. So that's opening up Microsoft to a whole bunch of like EU scrutiny, which I'll put a link in the show notes. They just released this sort of like, we generally expect to do good with AI and we promise not to like steal your data out of Azure. And like, they're having to do a bunch of stuff knowing that the EU is much stricter about things these days, especially regulatory things. And I think this Mistral acquisition or Mistral partnership is sort of like bubbling it to the top faster than Microsoft's like, oh, we better get ahead of this. The other thing with OpenAI is, man, what a weird, weird thing. We did the whole November thing, the Thanksgiving thing, the December thing. I mean, number one, there's been no announcement of what their new board is. So we still have no idea, like, did all that stuff change anything other than the one guy probably had to quit because he signed on the wrong, you know, on the wrong side of the fence. We have no idea if they've changed the pay structure such that like Sam Altman or anybody else is like more in line to be making money, or is he just on some weird power grab? And then now you've got, OpenAI and Elon Musk. I don't know if they're suing each other or Elon's just suing them over, you know, are they adhering to their charter of being open and where are they going? And, you know, it's just the weirdest thing because every few weeks they come out with something technology-wise that is unbelievable. And then the next day there is some, you know, complete distraction, legal issue or partnership issue or lack of transparency issue. It's such a weird, weird, weird thing right now in terms of, you know, I can't imagine being their PR people because it's like, you know, one day's good, one day's bad, one day's good, one day's bad. It's an interesting thing to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. You want to move on to the next one?
Yeah. The next trend, which none of us could have predicted, is that a bunch of the sort of web 1.0 companies or even web 2.0 companies. So the companies essentially that are sort of these mainstay things on the internet, essentially, you know, free services that lots of people use. And you realize that if you're getting it for free, your data is essentially the product and they're turning that into ads. Well, we're already starting to see Reddit as well as Tumblr beginning to sell their data instead of just ads, they're now selling them to various AI companies to feed into their LLMs. So the new, you know, what looks like the beginning of the new monetization model of the web is, you know, no longer or, you know, augment your ads with selling your data directly into these big LLMs and see where they go.
Yeah. And also too, to follow suit, the other thing we're seeing is like most of them aimed at OpenAI at this point, but
yep.
News outlets and other places like that, where the OpenAI, GPT-4 or 3.5 or one of these others were potentially, because I don't, you know, allegedly, I don't want to accuse them of it, were trained on data that has, you know, IP rights around it. And so those companies are now suing OpenAI, and OpenAI has just a ton of lawsuits against them now. So it is, and then they have now partnered with some news outlets. So it is going to be this weird of like, some companies are going to sell their data, some companies are going to license their, you know, their news yep. outlets or their data. And it's going to be this weird complex. Like what this feels like to me is a little bit of like the streaming wars all over again of like, hey, I want to watch this show, but it's on, you know, this service at this time and I can't get it anywhere else. Like, I wonder if over time, it's like, well, this model has been trained on, I don't know, the Wall Street Journal, but no one else has been. And so if I want data like that, I got to go to there. And so like it makes me wonder the longer term implications and trends of this is almost like this splitting up of the data going forward again.
Well, to me, it feels like two other things, and it's going to be really interesting to watch. So on one hand, you know, remember when like Uber got started, and you know, this is a little while ago, but when Uber first got started in so many places, in so many cities, in order to operate as a taxi service or a cab service, the people that drove the cabs actually had to have something called a medallion, which was just basically a license, but it was a really expensive license. And so, you know, they had basically negotiated with the city that like they were the exclusive license holder. Like people couldn't just randomly be cab drivers. And it was for safety reasons and accountability reasons, and I'm sure tax reasons and so forth. And Uber just basically came along and was like, well, we could try and go through that process and try and abide by the laws of whatever the city is or the country or whatever it was. And they just basically said, F that. Like, we're not going to do that. We're just going to go ram our service into these places. And if they want to sue us, that's fine. But we want to get a foothold in these places. Yeah. And so it's, you know, and their bet was just basically, you know, there's one of three outcomes. The people demand it because they love it. And so we're on the side of the people. Number two is like they legally block us and we go, okay, cool. Well, there's lots of other places to go. And then you have to deal with people being mad. Or number three, we're going to get hung up in lawsuits. And because they had so much VC funding, they were like, I'm pretty sure I can outlast you because I have sort of like unlimited money and you have like, you know, taxpayer money, and they're not going to put up with you wasting it on lawsuits. And I feel like to a certain extent, like OpenAI is kind of doing that with the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times or, you know, any of these big things. They're like, I'm going to steal your data, or, you know, allegedly I'm going to Hoover your data in somehow. And then, you know, if you want to fight me in court, like I'm pretty sure I'm going to have more money than you, or I can convince the courts of like, how are you going to figure out which data is which? And that seems like a complicated thing to get past a jury. And so it feels like they're betting that on one hand. And the other part is, and this is where it starts to get like really interesting, was like, you know, Google was doing this as well. They were like scraping everybody's, you know, newspaper sites and whatever. And then eventually they ran into lawsuits. But at that point, they were like, I already have all your data. People aren't going to your site anymore. I'm essentially putting you out of business. And that gets into the really interesting thing of like, well, that's fine. That's, you know, kind of anti-competitive business, or maybe it's just cutthroat business, however you look at it. But at some point, if all the places that generate data go away because they can't afford to be in business, like where are you getting your data from? And I feel like that's going to be one of those like lingering AI questions of like, okay, you've hoovered up all the data, but you want to stay current on what's new. Like, where are you going to get it from? And, yeah. And maybe it is the Reddits and the Tumblrs of the world, but like that stuff's not necessarily intelligent information that people are going to be like, oh, I want to pay an AI to get, you know, some, you know, weird chatbot 2376 is, you know, thing musings on Reddit. Like that doesn't help me at all. I want stuff from the Wall Street Journal or from the New York Times, you know, so it's going to create this sort of interesting vacuum of like, where does the data come from? Is the data any good? Did you put all those companies out of business?
Yeah. So, it reminds me of, there was a, I don't remember the podcast, but it was one of the AI podcasts I listened to. It might've been the This Week in AI, but they did kind of mention that of like, because of AI generated news articles, for instance, or some of these other things, like, are we going to reach a point where it's just AI reporting on AI? And like, we're going to have to put a timestamp on the internet of like, hey, in, you know, if it's after March 2025, there's actually no user generated content left on the internet because the companies are out of business.
Yeah. It's going to be like, you know, it's going to be like BC and AD, you know, in terms of, it's going to be like, you know, pre AI, maybe it's going to be like such and such PA, and then, you know, yes, be like zero PA, and then whatever after AI or yes, something. We'll have to come up with some maybe we'll have to come up with an acronym, and then we'll trademark it, and then that'll be our new monetization model for the Cloudcast. We'll just be in charge of time.
Yeah. And then OpenAI will put us out of business anyway.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you know, that'll be a mark of some sort of goodness or something.
All right. What's trend three, man?
Trend 3 looks like hardware. Everybody is looking at NVIDIA's giant stock price, their giant pile of cash, their key position in every single keynote, and they are very, very jealous. So what is going on in the I want to make chips market?
Yeah, so I mean, it's one of those, like, actually probably saw this coming a long time ago. First of all, just mainly because NVIDIA's market cap, I mean, NVIDIA overtook Amazon recently in market value. And they're investing $30 billion in a next gen chips. So they're doing what they do. They're a big company making a lot of money investing in their next generation. Well, there's a lot of things coming along that either competition out there from other folks that want a piece of that pie, or new technologies that are coming out. So there's almost two things to talk about there. So in the other companies wanting a piece of that pie, Microsoft and Intel are partnering together for chip generation. Sam Altman is rumored to be looking to raise trillions, not billions, but trillions, to completely redo chip manufacturing for the new AI wave. And then SoftBank is looking to raise $100 billion. And so it's so funny when you back into that. NVIDIA is looking at $30 billion. SoftBank is looking at $100 billion. Microsoft and Intel wasn't disclosed. Sam Altman is looking at trillions. I mean, obviously, this is big, big, big money. But then there's the technology side of it. There's some really interesting things. And this actually makes a lot of sense to me. There's a startup called Grok, which is not to be confused with Elon Musk's Grok. But they introduced something called an LPU, a language processing unit, to compete with GPUs. So think of it as a next generation chip that is purpose-built for AI. GPUs were the best chip for AI until now. LPUs could potentially displace that. And you're talking about like a 20x increase in certain open source LLMs is some of the numbers I've seen. So that's pretty neat. And then a new AI chips potentially using light waves is something else that's coming. So I think we're going to see, chips are sexy again.
Yeah. It definitely feels like something that we're going to begin to see all sorts of kids at the university level start taking some of these, these courses that are going to, align them to being in the chip design business and so on and so forth. That'll be really interesting. The other stuff about this is it's one thing for all these companies to, to say, hey, we're going to invest this much into chips, and, $30 billion sounds like a lot, and $100 billion sounds like a lot. And then you think back to just even during COVID, when we had, supply chain issues with trying to get chips and everything kind of running through places like TSMC and some of the other ones. Like, if all these chips kind of have to get built, the next sort of thing down the line is like, okay, cool, everybody's standing at some door with a big bag of money, but who's going to go about doing this? Because, it's not like we have a glut of fabs laying around. It's not like it's not like the existing fabs can probably do all of this new type of manufacturing in terms of the materials and the, how small they have to be and the tightness windows they need to have. So I think the fab sort of supply chain will end up being, the supply chain issues are going to start coming back around again. I mean, we already have them with NVIDIA chips. You can't necessarily get them, but that's going to be another big, big thing to start watching is, who's going to build all these things? Where are they going to get built? What materials need to get used? Which companies are, which countries are in charge of those materials? It does start to get really, really interesting again after decades of just being like, they're just CPUs. Don't worry about it. We'll get them. They'll show up whenever we want them.
Yeah. And it will be interesting too for me because, it's your typical, hey, you almost consider this a brand new market, but the same way, like when cloud came along, well, at first you and I probably remember everyone was investing $1 billion to build a cloud, right? Like any big vendor out there was like, we're pledging $1 billion to go build a cloud. And then at the end of the day, it all settled out into the big three, big four, big five. You're going to see this exact same thing all over again. Obviously, NVIDIA is already a player there. Obviously, Intel is going to be a player there. So, certain folks have, market advantage already, but you're absolutely going to see you know, the next generation, whether maybe LPU is the name that sticks, but the next generation of architecture of chips built specifically for AI, I wouldn't be surprised if we see, you know, 10 companies, you know, 15 companies doing this. And then, of course, it's going to consolidate down over time like it always does.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does make you wonder if people like ARM, who have kind of sort of gotten forgotten a little bit, you know, kind of reinvigorate themselves or come back or become part of this somehow, or, you know, not to mention we're going to need some sort of glossary and some cheat sheets and some things to be like, what's the difference between a GPU, a TPU, an LPU, an inferencing chip, you know, all those sort of things. People are going to want some primers on that stuff. That might be the next Cloudcast basics is what does all this hardware do?
Agreed.
Next trend we have is that Google, who, you know, in this AI world and even the cloud world, really should have been the leader. I mean, they created so many of these fundamental technologies that everybody's using, whether it's, you know, how to scale SaaS, or whether it was Kubernetes, or the you know, Transformer project for LLMs. Google's having a few ups and downs, and I think it's ultimately because their business model, search, is being heavily scrutinized as to what happens to the search world when AI comes along and people don't want links, they want answers.
Yeah. Well, and before I give you my feedback on, I'll ask you a question. Do you ever use AI to search?
I do notice. So I haven't gone off and done like using the Bing one. But I do notice that every time I do Google searches, at the top, you know, it does sort of try and do like a generative AI, mm-hmm. what it is. Now, the one thing I have noticed on the Google thing, and I haven't necessarily tried to think of search in some of the other tools like Gemini or Bard or ChatGPT. You know, in those I tend to go, I just want an answer, or I want a list, or I want a whatever. The generative AI stuff feels like they haven't quite figured out how to make it as fast as search, which obviously makes sense. They've had 25 years to do that. But I mean, the other thing is, at least on the Google side, and I don't know on the other ones, it does feel like they give me some generative AI answer, which you look at it and you go, okay, generally looks right, you know, whatever. And then the links underneath it look like a kind of a regurgitation of that same stuff. So it doesn't yet quite feel like, if I do searchy things, that the search results look all that different than the normal ad associated results. And I don't know if that's just my sample bias or whatever.
Yeah, it's fascinating to get your take on it. And we didn't talk about this until now. So like I do probably, gosh, 90% is too much. I'll say 75% of my searches are on with Copilot now. So with Bing and Copilot.
Oh, okay.
And I rarely use Google anymore. And it's, you know, now there's certain things I'm like, oh, I just want a big list of a whole bunch of links. Like I will specifically go search on Google for that. I don't actually use the generative stuff that Google does, but, and I, you know, haven't paid for like OpenAI's, you know, models or any of this other stuff. Like, I guess I'm just cheap. I just didn't want to pay $20 a month for that. But I will go use Copilot and turn on the GPT-4 and use that for searches. Like if I just want an answer to something, because it returns it back very, very clear, you know, it's very concise. And then it has the links to where it got it from. So if you want to dig in deeper at the bottom of it, I've been using that all the time.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, in this whole idea of like, is Google search business at risk? Like, you know, here's two data points, right? Like you're still doing it and I've kind of moved on from it. Who knows?
Yeah. I feel like asking the techies is like the worst thing you can do, because
agreed.
So much of what we do tends to be sort of like curiosity of the tech versus mm-hmm. being like,
oh yeah, I've been playing with Perplexity AI lately. Like I'm always like on the hunt for a new tool.
Right.
I admit.
Right. Yeah. I'm always curious. Like I've heard a number of people who are like, I basically have some sort of Copilot always kind of open in this window and I'm using it for stuff. And I would love to have people kind of read out like a week in their life. Like what, you know, what did you used to do? What's happening there now? And what are the things you're doing? Is it mostly like your work stuff where you're like, okay, I got to write an article and I need like five topics or I need like three or four suggestions and you're doing that? Or you know, is it like searches of like, hey, man, we're thinking about going to dinner tonight where it's a good steak place in Atlanta? Or, you know, like how much of it is just trying to make your work better versus, you know, just being like, no, that's just my new default. And, you know, and then how are you just dealing with like the little stuff that would have driven us crazy as technologists where we're like, well, that's cool, but you're in a different screen. And then you gotta cut and paste and it doesn't always paste. And, it, you know, like all that sort of nuancey stuff where the defaults tend to win because they're the defaults. And
but
so,
I'll add this, like I'll come back to Google for a second though. And again, maybe this is just me, but it does feel like there is a trend where, Google's, I don't want to say Google's best days are behind them, but they're in a valley right now. And what I mean by that is they've had lots of challenges with, you know, their AI search business or their ad business being, you know, at risk. They've had a lot of ups and downs in the AI business, and that's something they should have just nailed. They had the people, they had the team, they had the technology, and they just stumbled. And now it's been one stumble after another, whether it's been like the Gemini and Bard announcements, you know, some of them being accused of being faked, to the image generator going out of control, to their new, you know, scraper getting a lot of fire, to, I mean, it, I just feel like the downs versus ups for Google here recently, it's been more downs than ups, I guess is the way to summarize it. Now, like an up, I will give them credit though. Like they're releasing, I'll actually say like small LLMs, right? Like I think it's like a 2 billion parameter and a 7 billion parameter is some they release. So they're starting to release, you know, and it's probably going to be like just like Apple, it's kind of be designed to be like a runs in a chip, potentially
right.
a phone right. kind of thing. So they're doing some cool things. And, you know, Microsoft did those things as well. And, but I'm just shocked at, you know, you just kind of get a vibe off Google right now, and the vibe isn't awesome.
Yeah, they're in that really weird situation of, you know, the company is still making a lot of money. I mean, they continue to grow. They're making money. I mean, even Google Cloud is profitable now. And so, you know, what ends up happening in these big companies is, as much as you're going to have people saying like, hey, we're falling behind, or hey, somebody else is doing something cool, or why aren't we, you know, there's always the, yeah, but we're making money. So all of your complaints that we stink at this stuff is sort of like, yeah, but right. And we've seen this, you know, numerous times in tech history, you know, whether it was like Intel when they were on top, when, you know, the big data center CPUs were the thing, or Cisco was on top and they didn't realize that like merchant silicon was coming along, or, you know, there's tons of situations in which financially you look at the company and you go, God, they're making tons of money. I'm sure the people that, you know, are running the company are like, hey man, I hear you complaining, but like, look at the numbers. Like we're still beating the numbers. We're still beating expectations. We're still doing this thing. And the problem, I mean, the thing with Google is they've never managed bad news well, right? They've always been like, you know, there's always been the, hey, but they're going to kill stuff off. Hey, but, you know, whatever. And they just have never figured out the next sort of like, what's the next big thing? And, you know, I say that, and which sounds like the most trivial, you know, way of trivializing like, oh yeah, I forgot, when Google comes out with something big, it is global in scale. It is massively used, right? Like it's maps or it's right, whatever, right. Like as if they're, and you sit there and you go, no, they've been trying like crazy, whether it's like cars or, you know, whatever next moonshot thing they're doing. It's the problem that like when you're Google size, and people have an expectation of what your innovation prowess is, like what you've done before and what you're capable of and the type of people you hire, like they're in almost, I don't want to say a no-win situation, but they're in a, it's what's got to be an unbelievable pressure situation of like, no, I know that's a cool idea, or that's a neat thing you built on your 20% time, but is it global? You know, is it big enough? Is it big enough? And they just, they're now stuck in this thing of like, we're so big, we can't turn the money machine off with ads. We have this other thing over here, which, oh, by the way, we should have the best technology in the world to deal with AI because we've been doing it longer than anybody else. We have more investment in it. And they're just stuck in this weird, like, you know, I don't know how to get out of my own way. I don't know how to PR anything. I don't know. And at the same time, you're like, yeah, but you are doing a lot of good stuff and you still mm-hmm. keep it. You know, it's just, it, yeah, you're right. It's got to be a weird thing. And they're allowing, You know, they're allowing like, oh, this person got laid off and then they wrote a blog about it. And that sweeps the internet of like, oh, see, everything's wrong at Google. Right. Yep. And it's gotta be a really frustrating place to be when you're like, man, 95% of what I'm doing, 98% of what I'm doing is A, making the numbers. So that's good. It's still pretty amazing technology, but we've set the bar so high for ourselves that everybody looks at it and they're just like, yeah, but you know, like, it, yeah, it's gotta be frustrating as all get out. And, I think the really interesting thing to watch is going to be, do they keep the CEO and some of the leadership team? Because of all the complaints or all the things is, you know, they're definitely in a, what people call like wartime versus peacetime situation, right? Like the dynamics of their market have changed. They have the same leadership. And usually when those dynamics change, the leadership doesn't stay the same just because they're good at one thing, but not good at the other thing. But like, I haven't seen anybody do the thing with like they do with football coaches where it's like, well, here's the next five people that could become the next Google CEO. There's just a lot of people who are like, well, they should get rid of Sundar because he didn't figure out AI or he didn't figure out self-driving cars or he didn't. And it's like, yeah, but who are you going to put in there? Because that person's job is going to be such massive culture changing that that's super, super hard to do. And, you know, just pulling up some random internal person doesn't necessarily mean they're the right person to do it. So that, yeah, Google's going to be on the list of companies to just be like, what's going on there? Like, are there any bright spots that people should be aware of?
Well, you bringing that up actually makes me wonder too, like, are they in a, almost like a Steve Ballmer to Satya moment?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is one of those, and that's the crazy, so it's a great analogy, right? Like Ballmer, for those of that aren't sort of historians, like Ballmer was there. He was like the lead sales guy throughout all the Windows era when they became gigantic. And then he ended up taking over. Gates kind of left after the antitrust stuff happened. And then Ballmer sort of took over, and Ballmer tried to do the same thing at first, which was just like, we're Microsoft, you know, damn the torpedoes. We're going full steam ahead with whatever we want. And then at the end, he got into this weird phase of like, okay, we're going to get out of like Windows, or Windows is going to stop being our priority. And we're going to go chasing a bunch of markets. So they were like chasing search, and they were chasing mobile, and they were chasing hardware. And like, it's like they stopped leading and innovating and they started chasing everything. And then, you know, I don't know if he got thrown out or if he just decided, God, I'm so rich, I can just retire, and this is a good time to stop getting yelled at. And then they brought in this sort of unknown person, and, you know, Satya ended up, you know, he's done amazing things. It does definitely feel like one of these situations of like the next Google CEO, if there is a next one, is probably not somebody we necessarily know as a face we've seen all the time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's gotta be weird. And then it's gotta be weird also, 'cause like the Google culture was always built around you being in the office and the Googleplex and all that stuff. And the work from home thing probably hasn't helped them as much as, you know, it's probably harmed them as much as anybody in terms of like the really big companies.
Oh yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Completely agree.
So, anyways, we rambled on that for a long time. Let's sort of wrap this up. Maybe get to the last one that you got on your list, and yeah, Folks can dig into whatever else they want to.
Absolutely. So for the last one, it's interesting. It's all around Hugging Face, but it's a little bit of like not just Hugging Face because it's the place where this is happening, but it's another larger you know, OSS trends meet AI kind of thing, right? So. So let me kind of set the table here, right? So Hugging Face, two big things kind of happened in the last month. Hugging Face launches an open source alternative to OpenAI, OpenAI's custom GPT store, right? So anybody could kind of go in and create a custom GPT, and Hugging Face already had, I mean, over 500,000 models available. And then they went and created more of like a store-like experience of you can go do this with open source models. But now it's also been found, anytime there's a big repository and it's popular, somebody, you know, bad actors might come in, right? And so malicious LLMs have been found in Hugging Face repositories. And this is the same of like, I don't know, not to you know, Docker images or Docker repositories or container repositories in general, right, would have lots of vulnerabilities, and how do you secure them? And so I think we're starting to move into that next phase of like, hey, not just is there all these things available on this site, but now Hugging Face is probably going to have to also figure out how do they go not just host these things, but protect their customers as well. And this leads to all kinds of opening a big can of worms. But I found it really interesting that this trend developed as fast as it did.
Yeah. I mean, it's not surprising. I think the Docker Hub analogy is right. I think the other thing that's going to be interesting to watch with all these open models, I've seen this in a few different places, is, you know, in most of open source, even though we've talked about it a little bit, like most of open source was kind of dictated by sort of well-defined licenses. So like the GPL, or, you know, there's a whole bunch of them, and we've talked about them in the past before everybody kind of mixed, you know, open source licensing and like monetization. But like, you could go, oh, this is open source and it uses this license, and this is the way you have to behave with this license. The other thing that's going on with the AI stuff is, you know, the things that are quote unquote models that are open, is I've yet to see anybody who can really well define, like, what does it mean to be an open source data model? Because it's not only do you have access to the data, but then do you have access to the ways in which the model was built, what they call like weights and biases and prioritization and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, that's one of those areas that feels like we're going to get into grayness of, well, it's quote unquote an open model, but what are the limitations? Or can you actually, you know, could you actually rebuild it yourself? Or could you actually dig into it? And, you know, that right now doesn't feel like a terribly well-defined thing. So, you know, it's, as I think about this and we're sort of wrapping it up, man, we went into this Cloud News of the Month going like, okay, we've got a bunch of articles to talk about or some things to talk about. It feels like there was sort of 7 or 8 gigantic things that could be ongoing conversations, whether it's, you know, like how are chips going to get made? How much money is going into it? Where's data coming from? Who's got licensing? What's going on with Google? I think we may have a pretty good outline of stuff we may talk about for the next few months.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really the point here too, is by the way, with all of this, is like, we do not want to read news articles to you.
No, not. No, that's what Cloud News of the Week, the link in the show notes every week, is for. There are dozens of them there. You may get them from a newsletter. You may get them from us. Hopefully is we can provide some context around them.
Yeah. So, and again, this is, you know, our second time doing this, but we're definitely still playing with the format a little bit. So if you're still listening to us and you have feedback on this, we would love to hear about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, I'm going to wrap it up with that. We went long, as we always do, what usually our year-end wrap-ups. I think the Cloud News of the Month may actually run a little bit long sometimes, but that's okay. People tend to like the longer ones, at least occasionally. So, again, feedback is always welcome. show@thecloudcast.net. If you've got feedback, if you've got guest ideas, if you've got topic ideas, if you just want to tell us that we stink, or, hey, I wish
and
you
people
guys
have.
They do, and we appreciate it. And we try and read them all. We try and respond to them. We try and make the changes if they make any sense. If they're not just, hey, you guys stink, which is fine. But anyways, with that, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you all for listening. Thanks for listening last month. Thanks for listening all year. And hopefully, if you get a chance, give us a rating on Spotify or Apple or anywhere you get your podcasts. There should start being. Apple is going to start doing, what do they call it?
Transcriptions.
Those should start being in various players. They may not be in every single player, but they should start being in the different players, and we'll see how that rolls out. So that should be happening pretty soon, thanks to Apple. So with that, we'll wrap it up, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.